Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to Spin the Rally Pod episode 204. We've gone over our double century, and we're now setting our sights into the distance to perpetuity, because we're going to be here forever talking about rallying, kind of. Anyway, nearly the end of the season, but there's still plenty to talk about, taking a slightly different approach to today's podcast. But joining me, Lisa O'Sullivan, the rally fan, we have George Donaldson, former motorsport team boss. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Lisa. Lovely morning here after a very weekend in Scotland. There we go.
Yeah, toasty warm in the UK at the moment. I think temperatures around the world are all a bit on the wonk, but David Evans, head of media for Dirtfish.com.
Yeah, no, I thought you'd had a load of rain, George. There's not been rain.
Yeah, we did. Heavily. Oh, no, we had 110 millimetres in about 36 hours. So, yes, it was very wet.
Could you be slightly more accurate, please?
No, that's it. I have all my rain gauges in the back garden and my Davis weather stations for the anoraks like me amongst our listeners. My fascination with weather goes beyond motorsport. So
could you send me a link to the favoured, to the preferred weather station equipment? Because I would like to.
Well, you can.
Yes, can we stick a camera on that, George, so we can all follow your weather station?
You don't need to. You can just, if you just download the Davis weather app, you don't have to. I think you have to register for it, but it's free. And then you can find my little weather station, which is called Aelith. There's Aelith West. There is another one in Aelith, but it is inaccurate.
Is that spelt in a Gaelic
A-L-Y-T-H. A-L-Y-T-H. Oh, no. So Davis weather app, and then you search stations and put Scotland, and you can get a map up and it shows you. And anyway, mine is Aelith West. So I thought I was wet, but I think... I think it was Tindrum or Crean Larach, either that or Kinloch Leven. The last time I looked, they were up about 160 millimetres between Friday night and Saturday night.
Wow.
That was proper rain. But I mean, that area gets it all the time, so it copes with it. Here, the local councils have decided to not do the sides of the roads, so the roads are like little buns, like little canals, because the water goes in and it's got nowhere to go. So it comes off the fields, goes into the road, and it can't get off the road. So, of course, everyone says it's flooded. Actually, it's not. It's just a puddle. It's stupid. But the valley was flooded as well, and all the roads were closed. And that's just because of the... quite. I mean, that was a lot of rain for us in a 48-hour period. Pretty massive. So, but the river in the village, it stayed inside its course, so that was good. It's occasionally burst its banks, but not last weekend.
Also in Scotland, and also joining us today, it is the editor of Dirtfish.com, Luke Barry. But you're a little more city-based, Luke.
I am, and unfortunately I don't have any weather stories to really trade, and I couldn't even possibly compare with George's detail either, so I wouldn't even bother trying, even if I did.
I felt I needed to bring you in.
I can confirm it was also wet in Edinburgh. I don't think quite as bad as further north than me. But I spent a fair bit of my weekend, to be fair, indoors, so I didn't really notice too much of it because I'm that kind of person. But I was working, to be fair, so that's my excuse. It wasn't like I was completely hiding from the world for no reason.
I live in one of the driest parts of the UK. We haven't had rain for months, and it is, I think it was 26 degrees yesterday on the 8th of October, which is pretty much unheard of, even in the southeast of England. Crazy, crazy stuff. I'll tell you who's not here, but we definitely need to mention this. We don't have Farmer Colin
in the house today. Colin Clark is out working on the farm, which I think for all of us just conjures so many images of Colin Clark getting ready to go out and work with the cows.
Working with the cows. I mean, the mind boggles, doesn't it?
We're promised videos, aren't we?
Yeah. Can you imagine the trauma those cows are going to go through today?
Well, it's the singing. Not that way. It's the singing. He will sing to them, and it's an awful concept, really.
He gave us a little tease of one on the Dirt Fish production meeting WhatsApp, and the cows that were looking at us via his camera looked concerned.
Yeah.
But we'll follow that. But I'm going to hand over to you, Luke, because you've come up with the idea for today's podcast, and I think you should get us going on this one here. Explain why you have decided that we can wander off into whimsy and talk about what might have been or could have been.
I think what's nice here, first of all, is somebody's heard one of my wacky left-field brain ideas and said yes, which is never a bad thing. So that makes me pleased. But yeah, essentially the main theme of today's podcast, we will cover a couple other things at the end, but is just looking at driver moves in the World Rally Championship that we wish happened, essentially. Whether that's moves very close to happening or moves that just were never ever on the cards but we'd love to see for whatever reason. It just felt exciting, a bit fun to do in a quieter week of rallying, particularly in the context of obviously last week's big news that Ojt Tanak will be moving back to Hyundai from M Sports, so it felt like a good time. I've had the idea up my sleeve for a little while, but I thought now's a good time to try and deploy it. And I'm kind of curious what everybody's brainwaves are and where everybody thinks. And I think I'm going to potentially, looking at my sort of small shortlist, age myself a little bit with my picks from a certain era, put it that way. I think you can tell when I was maybe growing up a little bit and watching this purely as a fan. And where my brain's gone. But if I'm allowed to start, and I'm, to be honest,
go.
One of these things again. Absolutely. We're trying it, and it should hopefully spark debate each time we do it. But we're going a little bit in the dark here, a bit of a new concept, so bear with us.
Just want to just jump in very slightly here. If you are listening to this and you want to tell us what your picks would be as well, @DirtFishRally is the way to get in touch.
Yes, and tell us if we're completely crazy with where we're thinking or not. Because we probably are, let's be honest. But my first choice, and my apologies, it's a bit obvious, but I've picked out Sebastian Loeb and Ford. And this is one that almost did happen, David. And I'm going to bring you in here because I remember you wrote a story about this last year, just after Loeb actually eventually did drive a Ford in the WRC, obviously winning the Monte Carlo Rally last year. But I believe it was for 2006 where Loeb was in talks to join. This is when Citroën obviously took a year out. We were still representing the WRC, but not theoretically officially as a manufacturer to develop the C4. The new Focus was out. Obviously, Marcus Grönholm ended up driving that car. But this is the wonderful thing about this for me, is we don't get to contemplate just what would have happened if Loeb had gone to Ford. And to be honest, you'd have to assume it would be more drivers' championships. But where would Grönholm have gone, for example? Because obviously he was out the door with Peugeot. Would he have gone to a Kronos Citroën? Would he have been Loeb's teammate? You don't know. And this is what I love to think about. But David, at the time, you were working in the WRC then, weren't you? Forgive me for not knowing this off the top of my head, but at this point you were around. So
yep.
Do you remember this story around, and how real did it feel?
I remember it very well. I remember it was in 2005, and I remember the exact building where I was when I asked Loeb about the whole Ford thing. We were in Greece, and the event had finished, and he and I were just walking. Might have been out of the press conference or something like that. And we were just chatting, and I said to him, because the assumption was that he would just stay with whatever Citroën were doing. I think at the time there was an awful lot of discussion that yes, Kronos would run the factory Zaras. And obviously, there was some debate at that time that Citroën had pulled out of the championship, but then they came back, and they were going to then obviously spend 06 developing the C4. And I think I just kind of took it as read that he was going to stay, and I was like, yeah, you know, it makes a lot of sense for you to stay exactly where you know everything and keep working towards the next car. And just out of nowhere, he turned and said, yeah, but it can be nice to have a change as well. and it totally stopped me in my tracks. And we sort of stopped and I said, well, could we say that? And he said, yeah, why not? He said, you know, sometimes it's nice to have a change. And I completely hadn't expected it. So we wrote that story that, you know, he was actually genuinely considering a move to Ford. And of course, he went to M Sport and tested a Focus. I can't remember the date or anything now, but Malcolm Wilson still famously has the gloves that Loeb wore to drive the car back in 05. But ultimately, he did stay where he was, and it served him pretty well. He'd got that 06 championship sewn up in about 3 weeks or something, and then yeah. He had time to fall off his bike and break his arm and still win the championship, and then come back and dominate in a C4, and then dominate in a DS3 or whatever it was. So no, that one was on my list as well, Luke. That's a good one. And in terms of where Grunholm would have
and
gone.
Mine.
I had a feeling there could be crossover, didn't I? It's the thing. I've come up with several in case we had that scenario. We've all had the same brainwave. So apologies for stealing everybody's thoughts there.
But
the Loeb thing was interesting because of the whole Kronos period as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. That whole thing. And I think just to come back on teammates, for me, Grunholm and Loeb as teammates would have been fantastic. It would have been so interesting to see those two working in the,
David,
in
now
the same team.
Now you've lit my fire. That would have been just... I think that would have been the most powerful film of all time. Two guys that genuinely, totally relaxed, enjoy collaborating, but are very, very focused on what they do. There would have been huge fair battles going on there, I'm sure of it. That would have been stunning. Yeah, just absolutely amazing.
So I had a couple of M Sport-related moves. The first is taking us back into the mid-80s, and one which potentially, who knows, it could have come close. And it's a story I remember Malcolm Wilson telling me about when, again, I can't remember the event he was on. It might have been Corsica or somewhere in 86 when he was driving the Metro. And Malcolm said he was walking into a room behind Jean Todt. And Todd was talking to somebody, and Todd didn't know that Malcolm was there. And Malcolm heard Jean Todt say to somebody, "What about this Malcolm Wilson guy then?" As in very quite deferential and glowing terms, as in, do we need to think about signing him? So potentially, had Group B continued, could we have seen Malcolm Wilson in a Peugeot, in a factory Peugeot? George, you'd know perhaps, well, certainly
well,
better
what
than
would
me.
Have happened then?
Yeah, how... Malcolm Wilson, you know, he was a world-class driver. But the 6R4 was a fabulous car, and we all loved the noise. But it was never quite up to the mark in Group B. It would have been amazing to see Malcolm in, I hate to say, one of the proper Group B cars, but, you know, something like a Lancia or a Peugeot or even... I mean, he obviously drove for Ford, didn't he, as a development driver?
And well, did he not drive Quattros for a while as well?
He did, but he never quite got the ultimate spec Quattro, did he? He was always... it was always one of the David Sutton cars, which were perhaps just a step down.
Well... Yeah, depending on who you talk to, actually. If you talk to David Sutton, he'll tell you they were better than the factory cars. Malcolm was at his peak in the Escort, without a doubt. So I mean, that's going back a long way, you know. Mm. And then you remember for a while he was still effectively a factory driver. He drove the front wheel drive Escorts the when they first came out, the Group A Escorts.
Yeah.
Which I don't think weren't overly brilliant, and he was miserable as sin driving them. I remember speaking to him I was marshalling actually, speaking to him at a Burma rally, which was an international rally on the west coast of Scotland, believe it or not. It must have started in Glasgow at that time, and I mean it would have run the same length as a WRC rally out on the west coast.
Wow.
Amazing forests. And I remember speaking to him and he was as miserable as sin. And we were chatting at a service point or something, although I was marshalling, every second of the event. And it was a sort of 36 hour event. It ran really, really fast and no breaks. It ran right through the night. It was pretty zany. and he was just as miserable as sin. And I remember thinking, what a miserable bugger. You know, he's got a factory drive. He's driving a, you know, he's driving a Group A car. They're going to come with something else, and then he's going to be in the frame. But did he ever drive the RS 200s?
Yes, think he did. He did the Lindisfarne. As a test event. I guess, you know, coming to that front wheel drive thing, that was terrible. And if you'd driven a proper Group 4 RS 1800, you could understand him being a little less than chipper.
But he wasn't, nobody shone in those cars. I remember thinking actually that, you know, his performances were pretty good. And I remember even thinking at that time, I think I maybe even said to him at the time, because, you know, you knew those drivers a wee bit. I knew Malcolm before I ever worked in a rally team, because you walked around the service points, and if you were a big spectator like me and marshalling, these guys recognised you. Didn't necessarily know your name, but they knew your face. And I remember certainly thinking it and talking to my mate, saying, this is making him faster. You know, he has to wring that car's neck, like I ring my Mini or my Fiesta or whatever I had at that time. It rings its neck, and it'll make you a better driver. It'll make you quicker. So when you drive the next car you drive and you ring its neck and it's a Group B car, you'll win. I mean, that was my genuine thoughts on the matter.
So my other...
Would we have had M Sport if he'd have...
I'm sure I was suddenly thinking. But
there was always a businessman in Malcolm. So yeah, 100%. We would have. Yes. And just to skip along, Chris Meek to M Sport was my other M Sport related one. That time when everyone was wondering what he was going to do, was he going to get a Citroen deal? There was some talk of a kind of British super team. With Northern Ireland, Chris Meek. It kind of never really got off the ground. But it would have been amazing.
Why not?
I can't remember. This probably was going back now maybe 10 years. I'm sure it
so
probably was.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, so when you say British super team, would that have been Meek and Evans?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay. Exactly. And it would have been great. It would have been... an amazing opportunity for British rallying, but I think the other one going back even further, which I had at the top of my list, was to put in whatever manufacturer would have been Colin and Richard, who of course were teammates at Subaru when Richard was part of the junior team in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And actually, no, because then they competed in the World Championship together, didn't they, through 95, because Burnsy was on the podium when Colin won the championship in 95. And then Richard went to Mitsui in 96, I think, didn't he? So sometime after that, it would have been good to see the two of them back together again when they were both fighting for the championship. So maybe it would have been fabulous to see Colin go back to Subaru in after Ford. I don't know. This would be a good time for somebody to offer an opinion.
In fairness, I actually had that same example on my list. I went very specific, and actually it's probably a little bit... I'm changing a few scenarios, and I guess it's a little bit sad in a sense, but I had it down as 2004 being the year we could get them together, because Burns is obviously meant to be at Subaru that year if obviously his health hadn't done what it had done, and Colin ended up without a drive. So I think... This is not to discredit Petter Solberg, who was my favourite driver when I was a child. I have no problem admitting that. But there would be no room for him at Subaru in my dream scenario here as reigning world champion. He's off somewhere else.
Or it would have been the 2003 world champion as a third driver to Colin and
Richard. Imagine that. They break the rules that were just coming in after the third car. But yeah, I completely agree. I think it would have been... And it's one of these tantalising things you always dream about. I guarantee if it happened, it wouldn't have been half as interesting because we all think it would have been. But just to wonder, and it's one of these things that I think it's nice, and it sounds strange, but it's nice that it didn't happen because it gives us something to think about, if that makes sense. Mm. Like, we can just, it can't be ruined. It can be the best thing ever because it's all just in our heads. And this is why I like this idea, is you can just dream of things. I actually think Meek and Evans would have been very interesting, but particularly if it was maybe a couple more years into Evans' career when he was building his craft, because obviously, yeah, that particular Chris wasn't at his necessarily, he wasn't uber experienced in WRC at this point, despite his years in a rally car and what he'd achieved. He was still having to learn some of the events as well. But yeah, I think that would have been a very, very interesting comparison, because I think particularly at the time, everyone would have had Chris down as the faster one and Elvin down as the consistent one. But I would argue that nowadays, Elvin's probably just as quick, if not potentially quicker, yeah, than Chris was. So to see them at their peak together in the same car would have been fascinating. Mm-hmm. But you're right, it's one of those that the whole, as you say, from the British rallying angle, two sort of British drivers in the British team would have been sort of the dream scenario in a sense. It would have been very good for you in your days at Autosport, David, I think, for selling covers.
It would, but I do remember doing features with the two of them, particularly obviously when it came to Rally GB time. There'd always be some sort of feature idea of let's get them together and do this and this. And it was always, you always got the feeling around that time that Elvin was kind of in the shadow of Chris. You know, Chris would always lead those features and have more to say. And like you say,
is that just not an age thing?
No, yeah, I guess it. Yeah, probably. Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. You're probably right there, Lisa. And I think, like you said, Luke, it was an experience thing. Yes, Chris didn't have a vast amount of experience, and probably, you know, still doesn't. It's one of the things that people are quick to forget. Is just, Meek only probably did two or three full championship seasons in WRC.
Yeah.
But he, like you say, he'd spent a lot of time in a rally car. And I think that the dynamic within the team would have been very dominant in that team. But like you say, it would have been interesting to see as the years passed just how the two of them would have worked together. So here's one for you, though. Calais to Hyundai for next year.
So we've got Calais, Neuville and Tanak in the same team. Wow. Yeah. That would be, yeah, quite something.
Or I think, remember when we wrote that story in the middle of the year that Calais or Timo Jokke was talking to Hyundai? So that, for me, that would have been, obviously he would have perhaps gone and then Tanak maybe would have gone back to Toyota. But we're kind of building into that same sort of thing that Loeb was a Citroen driver, is Calais now very much a Toyota driver and will remain a Toyota driver, and who knows what Calais is going to do after his next Toyota contract ends.
Yeah,
you know, maybe he does take that break.
Yeah, perhaps the good speculation there, David, is that move from Timo Jokke in the summer was all about money. You know, it's pretty obvious to me. and I just wonder, I'd love to know what Calais is now going to be earning next year.
Yeah,
because there'll be a significant step there.
But I think
that's always
well.
That, I've always wondered that, George. Just as a side step.
Sorry,
here, George,
David.
When you are building that, a team, and you are trying to put your dream team together, I mean, obviously we're talking completely budget free, and money's no object for the dream teams that we're trying to put together. But as a team boss, when you're trying to get your personnel in place, what are the most important things? Is it just that you get the fastest, best driver, or do you need someone who fits into the team properly?
I think you would always look for someone that would fit into the team. That was certainly a factor. And I always remember Uwe Andersson after Jimmy McRae had been at Toyota. I can't remember whether Colin was there. I don't think Colin was there. There was two or three other people with Jimmy. I think one might have been Campbell Roy. And Uwe, so I recused myself from the meeting. So I greeted everybody downstairs in the reception, took them up to the boardroom, and then Uwe came in, and I can't remember who else was there from our side, someone from HR probably. And then I just said, guys, I've unfortunately got a call, and I'll just leave you here. And I pre-arranged that with Uwe, that I didn't want to be in the meeting, because I kind of knew how it was going to go. I didn't expect Colin to be driving for Toyota. That wasn't Uwe's concept. And I think,
why not?
I think generally speaking, Uwe didn't like Colin's behaviour.
Was that around
97.
Yeah,
I would guess 96, 97.
Which, and, that,
you know,
was
Jimmy's such a gentleman, you know. I mean, he always is. I mean, he's the nicest guy in the world to deal with. You know, on a personal level, like I said, I never got involved in that that particular negotiation. I just recused myself because I felt somehow too close to it.
There was that time when Colin was fined for speeding in the service area in Argentina, wasn't? And there was
When was that?
I think that was around 96.
Maybe that's what coloured it then. Maybe.
And just yeah. around that time, that was the time that DR was really trying to sort of push Colin as the guy who, you know, the kind of gung-ho driver that everybody wanted to associate with. And I think that all of that did Colin's reputation a lot of harm, you know, but it suited the narrative that DR was establishing for Subaru.
It sold rallying, though.
It did, but
I mean, you still have the legend of Colin McRae dominating the narrative for people that perhaps aren't watching as much rallying now.
It's true.
But someone told me Colin's road car, sold for £450,000. Was it like last week or the week before or something?
Which
quite
one?
Recently, some road car, a Subaru road car, he had sold for some massive amount of money. I said that can't be right. Surely that was a rally car. And he said, no, I think it was just his road car. I said, it can't have possibly been, not for that much money. But maybe it did. I mean, I was merely outlining the fact that Colin is an absolute legend in our sport, in all motorsport, really. I mean, I think, you know, you talk to people in America, you know, racing people, not even rally people, and they all know Colin McRae.
I remember one of the final interviews that I got to do while I was on event with Colin was... and I thought he was winding me up, that he was considering having his little finger amputated, because he kept snapping it every time on the wheel, and he was sick of having to strap it to his index finger. So he was seriously contemplating having that little finger taken out because it was getting in the way. And that was when I kind of realised quite what a legend someone is when they consider modifying their body in that way to actually... be quicker, to be faster, to have less pain.
It was after he crashed in Corsica, wasn't it? The second.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And it got trapped on the A pillar.
I met him at the Edinburgh Airport BA lounge. We were in there and we're sitting. He had enough time. He never arrived that early at airports, but he was obviously on time that day, and he was in the lounge and we sat there and we sat together on the flight on the way down, and he was talking about it, and I basically said, Colin, it's your little finger, just get it taken off, what difference is it going to make, with a sort of wry smile on my face, and his head just about came off his shoulders. What do you mean? I said, well, what does your pinky actually do? If you've not got it, how does it affect anything you do? Yeah. I said, you know, do you want to win the world championship or not? And the look of aghast and horror on his face, I mean, maybe I'd stolen his thunder for his planned press release and comment that he made. But 4 or 5 days later, out comes the story, and I thought, oh yeah, there you go then. I'll not take credit for it, but I remember it was one of the few times I've ever actually seen Colin McRae a little bit shocked. I mean, I spent a fair bit of time with Colin on flights from Edinburgh to London. It's only an hour flight. I mean, it was a lot of fun. But I remember actually being quite surprised that he was so shocked about that. I said, come on, Colin, it's only a little finger. Get it off.
That's a complete lack of commitment from Colin McRae, isn't it? I mean, good lord. Like you say, it's just your pinky. Just get rid of it.
I remember thinking, did I suggest that to them? And now that you make me think about it, his head snapped off his shoulders. Who talked to you? Who told you about that story that we're going to release? You know, seemed like a pretty obvious thing for me to do. It was causing him some... Because there was talk at that time that he couldn't do the rally because of the pain. Because he kept, as you say, David, he kept knocking. It said, cut it off. What difference does it make?
Yeah. But I have a couple more on my list, and this was very close to happening from what I understand, but it obviously didn't. And it takes us right back to the top of the 80s and to the top of what would have been an all-conquering, even more all-conquering Audi team, when Walter Rall was going to join Audi, I think, for 81. And then didn't to have Volta in the team from the outset. Would have been pretty sensational to have him alongside Hannu Mikkola. The reason he didn't join Audi in 81 was because he was going to join Mercedes. And Mercedes was also planning a four-wheel drive Group B car at that time. And then pulled the plug and left left Volta high and dry through 81. But still paid him handsomely. But that's the reason he never did many events through that season. So it, for me, that would have been... It would have been superb to see him, see what he could do.
I remember speaking to Hannu Mikkola about Audi. So when did he go? He went there in 1980, wasn't it? 1980?
Yeah, the end of 80. Yeah, yeah.
The end of 80. So
I think it was the end of 80.
Basically, Hannu didn't really. You know, the factory drives weren't like the factory drives today. You could have a factory drive and drive other things potentially at that time. And Hannu was offered a huge amount of money to go and develop the Audi, which everyone thought was going to be a crock, an absolute crock. They had no heritage particularly to play on. They had some heritage, but nothing to play on, and there wasn't much confidence. But I do remember Hannu saying that he didn't actually say how much he was paid, but he was paid a vast amount of money to go and develop that car for Audi, he went for it because he had no other drives and the other options weren't brilliant.
Because Ford had gone, hadn't they then?
A vast amount of money. He was offered much more than anybody else was being paid at the time. He became the highest paid rally driver around that time by a significant amount. And then, of course, as he developed the car, he realised, bloody hell, this is going to be brilliant. And I mean, it was basically a Group N car, even at that time. Honestly speaking, I mean, if you looked at that, you look at that car now, it's somewhere between a Group N and a Group A car. You know, standard pedal boxes, cut and welded, and bits and pieces. It was very standard transmission type thing in it. I think it was still a synchromesh gearbox. I remember it wasn't a very good gearbox anyway, and it was in it by comparison to even the dog boxes of the time. But in terms of smart moves for Hannu, that was the smartest. Goodness gracious! He then went on to dominate for what was it, 5 years basically, either winning everything or very close to it.
It was good.
So for Walter, bad decision. For Hannu, smart as. Yeah. Smart as a pair of tight pants at a disco. Struggled for an analogy there. I don't know where that one came from.
That's some analogy for a Monday morning, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And my final Group B one would have been Henry Toivonen to Peugeot around 84. So for him to join Vatanen. Because I always felt with Toivonen that he was obviously a world champion in the making and just... an incredible, outrageous talent that obviously we just didn't get to see the absolute best of. Just when he was coming to the height of his power, obviously he was tragically was killed in Corsica in 86. And he'd only got his hands on a four-wheel drive Group B car in November of the previous year when the Delta S4 made its debut on the RAC. So to see him through 85... In a Peugeot in a 205 with it would have been obviously Timo, it would have been a Finnish super team, wouldn't it, with Vatanen, Salonen and him, but obviously Ari was out after Argentina in 85. But Toivonen, the more we could have seen of him in a four-wheel drive Group B car, the better, and it would have been but he was kind of, you got these drivers that were Lancia through and through in those days, and him and Marco Allen were absolutely aligned with Northern Italy, weren't they?
Do we think... Well, I mean, previous to that, then Henry had sort of, you know, he'd had those. I mean, he had a long apprenticeship. Henry, what was it, 5-6 years? He'd been an also ran man. You know, he'd been an up and coming young driver like Timo Salonen, going really quickly, and then, you know, slipping off the road for no reason. Obviously had that one really incredible result on the RAC. What year was that? 80?
It was 81. Was it 80? 81. Sorry.
80 or 81 with Paul White. He had that event. But then ProDrive got their their hands on them and promised them all sorts of Porsche factory Porsches, which never happened, and it was all private. And I don't know, his career sort of fell into a little bit of a decline around those decisions. And then
1980, sorry.
Yeah, and obviously when he then got the Lancia drives, and I remember, was it 1984 Acropolis Rally? He was driving an 037, I think it was, and he crashed, like about four or five stages in, just a speed crash as well. And that, and you know, that's the sort of thing that happened to him. You know, he did an Esapekka Lappi basically, but then all of a sudden, when he got that four wheel drive, that was his steed, wasn't it? That was him. I mean, he basically, what was his winning ratio in that car, David?
He won the RAC.
He bet 50%, isn't it?
Did he win Sweden? Or did Stig win Sweden?
I'm sure
50%, Luke, did he say?
I'm just guessing. Yeah. Well, Kankanen could have won Sweden, I know that, somehow.
Right, okay, that year, okay.
But check me, check me on that. But he obviously, Henry obviously won his first two events in the car, didn't he? I remember that. And he obviously didn't get that many in the end, tragically, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. It could be around 50. I'm not looking. This is all off the top of my head. So
anyway,
so I have dived onto our favourite results page, ewrc-results.com.
You're very quick at doing that, David. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. So he did. He did. RAC won it. Monty won it, and won it in the Monty one was a very special one because he'd had that road accident which completely twisted the chassis, and they patched it up, and so he won that, and then retired in Sweden with the engine. And then obviously they were withdrawn in Portugal after Dos Santos's crash, killing the spectators. So Lancia was one of the teams that withdrew. And then, of course, Corsica was the next event after that. In terms of rallies that he finished, he won 50% of them. In 2 out of 4. Sorry, that's taken us down a rather dark alley there. But for me,
yes and no, but.
It would have been epic to see him in that.
The reason I laboured that point was because it's quite interesting. You know, we're talking about drivers and drivers past and present. Hold that thought, Luke. Is the fact that, you know, Henry Toivonen was regarded at the time, you know, before he started to hit these major triumphs, he was a bit of an Esa-Pekka or a Timo Sunninen, somebody that's had a chance, not quite managed to make it work. And would he come good? And boy, did he come good, you know, massively.
I didn't know any of that. Interesting. So
what happens now with these guys? You know, Ford are looking for a driver. Well, they've had Esa-Pekka and he left, and they've had Sunninen and he left. But could they go back there to Ford and give them a driver next year? Because M-Sport's needing a driver next year, aren't they?
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. Luke, what were you?
I was going to quickly ask something, but I'll keep it very quick because I know time's getting away from us and we've still got some to go through. I was just going to simply ask David and George, do you think Henry would have been 86 champion if history hadn't gone the way it had?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the strength of what was happening, yes, I think a very good chance. But you say that, do not forget the underlying strength, David, of Juha Kankanen. You know, he left Toyota at the end of 85 on an absolute winning streak, you know, in terms of you know, his growth and performance. And he went into that Peugeot and with a new code, well, a former co-driver. I think Pirinen had been with him before. Maybe he hadn't actually, but anyway, Juha Pirinen went with him instead of Fred Gallagher, and they just walked away with that championship, really, didn't they? Well, they didn't walk away with it because Marku had won it for about 11 days before they got excluded, and left Juha a very fair and honest champion. That was his first championship, so I'm not necessarily sure that Juha wouldn't have risen to the challenge and done it, but I mean, certainly it was going to be a three-way fight, not a two-way fight, if Henry had been there.
All rallying, one source. By now, you know that dirtfish.com is the place to go for all of your rallying news. But when it's time to try your hand behind the wheel, just join us here at Dirtfish Rally School, nestled in the Cascade Mountains in Snoqualmie, Washington. Whether you're a pro seeking extra seat time or a novice looking to get started, we've got programs tailored to all rallying needs. And when you want to watch the best in the world, just head over to our YouTube channel. Our coverage of the WRC and American rallying is second to none. Follow us at Dirtfish Rally across all social media platforms and shop the latest looks in our merchandise store now. As always, rally on.
I'm aware, George, that you haven't mentioned anybody on your list. Is there somebody you would like to...
Yeah, I mean, when Luke first mentioned this, I said, oh, yeah, I've got lots of stories to tell. And then I thought about it. I said, yeah, can I give those away on a free podcast? I think people should be paying for these stories.
I wholeheartedly agree, George.
Joking apart, there needs to be a Dirtfish series of... dinners, you know, after, and you can be the after dinner speaker. We can all have a lovely meal, have a couple of drinks, and you can tell the stories that you can't tell here and the stories that you are going to tell us here. And we can get through at least another five of your near fatal plane crashes.
we must have done all those. People must have heard all those.
I don't think we have. I think we only just scratched the surface on those, George.
I mean, my stories about airplane crashes are nothing compared to Nini Russo of Lancia's helicopter crashes. I mean, I was in 7 years with airplanes.
I've leaned you away. I'm leaning you back, George. Stick a pin in that one.
Tell me your
would be pairings.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think it would have been super interesting if Colin had come to Toyota end of 97, but we were trying to get Carlos Sainz at that time, and we had Didi Auriol at
King
that
Carlos.
Time as well. And Didi was good. He developed the Corolla, but there was a possibility to get Colin. And I think if Colin had come and joined us at that time, he would have got a lot more out of the Corolla than I categorically say this now. You know, is anybody ever thinking that George Donaldson is not a Colin McRae kit fan? If Colin had joined us at Toyota in that Corolla, that would have been his car. He would have wrung that car's neck, and also he would have developed it in a different way. I'm not berating in any way Carlos or Didi's development skills, but Colin just would have just refused to drive what they were offering him and said, make it softer, you know, just in Colin's usual laconic way. This is, you know, he would have just cut through the mustard and said, this is stupid, I'm not driving it, you know, make it right, just put softer springs in it, do X, Y, Z. But even without that, even as it was, Colin's innate driving technique, which is so different from Didi Auriol's, so different from Carlos Sainz, every bit as quicker on the day, I would suggest, as often as not. But I think Colin would have got two world championships out of that Corolla, potentially, in 1998 and 1999. I genuinely... Could say that was a possibility. So whilst they recused myself from the meeting, it was somewhat reluctantly, but just in a discussion I had with Uwe, my boss at the time, Uwe Andersson, I just knew it was better that I wasn't involved. So
So without Uwe, do you think it would have happened then?
I was very practical and at that time in the team Remember, I'd just come off 1986 when I'd basically, you know, Uwe wasn't allowed on any rallies. I had quite a strong voice with Uwe at that time. But I mean, Uwe was very, very much the boss. He made all the decisions for everything. I made all the run of the mill, normal decisions of a team. But Uwe was absolutely the boss. No, I mean, I think maybe he thought about Colin, but he there was something about Colin he just didn't quite like. I think some of the, like I said, maybe some of the behaviour. But look, he had the option on Carlos Sainz. We were quite happy with Didi at that time. I felt Didi was absolutely a massive Didi Auriol fan, but flighty. You know, he's a very, you know, it's like a nervous racehorse, you know, if you like. You know, you had to get everything just right for Didi, whereas Colin, you know, give him a three-wheeler. He's going to get fastest stage times, isn't he? I mean, there was the Colin McRae real brilliance. Everyone thinks about Colin McRae's real genius for me was just being able to extract more than the maximum out of any given position. And the reliability and strength of that Corolla was legendary as a rule. I mean, it had its issues. But again, I just somehow think that Colin would have really just dusted that off and done really well. It's one I would have really liked to have seen anyway. Maybe I'm speculating. Of course, that's pure speculation and wishful thinking. That would have been amazing. But you can move forward in time. There's other interesting stories. We very nearly, at that point, signed up Marcus Grönholm. So Marcus Grönholm drove our car in. When did Marcus go to Peugeot? Was it 1998 or 1999? 1999. So in 1998, although Marcus had driven the car for us in 1997 on Thousand Lakes Rally, on its launch event, and very admirably as well, albeit from a fantastic road position. But I think we were leading the rally after the first day, first time out in a car, which is pretty stunning.
And he ran out of petrol though, didn't he?
David.
PTSD has just been monster, David. Well done.
I thought that wound was completely healed. I'm back into therapy now.
Sorry. Yeah. Apologies.
Yeah. Oh dear, that's completely buggered me now. Sorry.
But it was amazing that
the story,
that was
the story of him going to Peugeot is the best ever. Well, that's the best story ever. Yeah, for me. So you were saying, David?
Carry on.
Well, just firstly, I think we all absolutely want to hear the story of him going to Peugeot now. But also just weird that Toyota gave that incredible Corolla to a driver that wasn't, but should have been, a factory driver with Marcus. You know, you can't really kind of imagine that happening now.
Yes and no, I think, ultimately. But no, well, basically no, but it was inspired at the time. Remember, Marcus was given a factory car in, was it 91, Thousand Lakes Rally by Toyota? I think it was 1991.
He was just sort of loaned the car, wasn't he? Go off and
run it. It was a loaner. Uwe Andersson was his godfather. There you go. Did you not know that?
Nobody knew that. I didn't know that, no.
Marcus's father is it Ulf Grondahl?
Yes, yeah,
ULF. Yeah. He was killed in a recce accident. That was in the days when recce was free. Obviously Uwe was a friend of Ulf Grondahl's, and I don't know whether he was actually the godfather, but he certainly treated Marcus like a godson. And you know, when Toyota came up through in the 70s and the 80s and obviously into the 90s, and Marcus became a pretty decent rally driver, as an up and coming rally driver, he was lent cars by Toyota, which we could do at that time. So if there was a super interested importer that wanted to run a domestic program, We could lend them a car. We had the Uwe generated the mechanism for lending cars, you know, and we lent cars to Denmark to Henrik Lundgaard.
Yeah.
Later, that was later. He was effectively lent a car. These weren't rental cars; they were lent. So you paid for rebuilds and things like that. But I mean, you just paid factory prices. You weren't paying factory overheads. So when we were doing that in the 90s, our cars would have been, you know, half the price of a Subaru or whatever. You know, we Toyota definitely kept the prices down on all that business to some extent. We didn't sell a lot of cars, but those that we did were much cheaper and they were more difficult to get than anything else. But if you could get one, it wasn't that expensive. But you had to have that connection with an importer to do it. So it wasn't so amazing that Marcus got that car, and then he earned his drive in 98, yes. And again I can't remember what his result was in 98. It was pretty good initially, at least. I can't remember. Again, you'd have to go into EWRC, our favourite partner results website. Absolutely amazing, and
Then he went to Peugeot.
Well, at the end of that, Didier had had quite a tough year in 98, you know, up and down. As I said, thoroughbred racehorse, and it was struggling to get the best out of the car, a car which, quite honestly, should have been a little bit better than it was. Uwe was of the opinion that we should just give the car to Marcus. But I was a little bit nervous that he would say that. Marcus was actually already getting excited at the prospect. But then ultimately, Uwe would have gone with, if Didi was humming and hawing about signing for 99 because the car wasn't that, it wasn't the car that he wanted. So I guess he was going to be exploring other options. And at that time, the industry standard salary was very, very high. Of course, Uwe would also be able to save money by giving the drive to Marcus. So that was probably also a factor. But I remember having quite long and protracted discussions with Uwe about this during the event and actually after the event. But one of my very good friends in the team, dare I name him, Gwyn Dolphin, who was our PR and media marketing agent, I don't know what you call him, but he was actually full time in the team at that time. Was Gwyn. We were discussing that, you know, Marcus is going to get left high and dry here, so he thinks he's going to drive for us in 99, and I was quite sure that Didi would finally stay, and that would leave Marcus with nothing because he would hang on and wait. Marcus didn't really have a manager per se at that time, so. I had a discussion with Marcus to say, look, Marcus, you need to look around in the marketplace. You need to have a look. Yeah, but I've tried. I've been on the phone to ProDrive, to Malcolm, and you know, there's nothing much on the go and this and that and the next thing. I said, okay, let me speak to Gwyn and we'll see what we can do. So I went away and spoke to Gwyn. I said, right, Gwyn, scenario X, here it is. I said, how can we get Marcus a little bit of a trial with some of the other cars off the back of this incredible 1998 Thousand Lakes performance, and it was amazing, as I recall. It was obviously, it had been very quick, so Gwyn very quietly had the word in one particular journalist's ear and whispered in his ear that Marcus was going to get, it can't really be released yet, but it looks like Marcus is going to get a contract for 99 with Toyota, full drive. This particular journalist was known as a little bit of a tattle. So if you wanted something leaked, he was the guy to tell, basically. And so Gwyn had just whispered in his ear and then come and told me, he said, I'll bet by, you know, tomorrow evening, this story will have come back to me 10 times. Well, it was 30 minutes later, it had come back to both of us, about a dozen times. And all of a sudden, I spoke to Marcus later that evening. George, my phone's been ringing off the hook. He said, ProDrive have called me up. They want me to come and test the car. I said, well, what have you said? He said, well, I'm not sure. No, I've got the offer from Toyota. I said, you've got an offer from Toyota, but it's not solid. You've got to go. Do you think? I said, get them to get you a flight. And get you there, and the next morning I get a phone call from him, or maybe I saw him at breakfast or something, I can't remember. He had Malcolm on the phone to him, wanting him to must have been Malcolm. Of course, it was Malcolm at that time. Malcolm to go and test the Ford, and then out of left field came the call from Peugeot, and so Peugeot had called. And do you think I should bother going to that one, George? Because, you know, it's just a development car and, you know, it's X, Y, Z. I said, Marcus, let's just look back on Peugeot. Every time they're involved in the WRC, it's amazing. Look at the Group B Peugeot. You know, that is the team. Of all the teams you've mentioned, Peugeot's the one to go to. But go and test all three and see what happens. Well, he got helicoptered here and helicoptered there in Britain, going to various tests. And then he went to France and phoned me up after that meeting and mentioned that, you know, well, it was a development year and he would get to do a number of events, but in a two-wheel drive, front-wheel drive car. And, you know, was it really what he wanted to do? Because the Ford and the Subaru options seemed so much better. And I remember spending hours with him on the phone saying, look, you know, let's talk about the offers. What's on offer, X, Y, Z? And the Peugeot one wasn't the richest. In fact, it was the poorest option, but there was good bonuses. There was wind bonuses going to come in there. But I remember counselling him very, very strongly to go to Peugeot. In fact, I think I even might have co-opted Fred Gallagher to speak to Marcus, just to say, Marcus, go to Peugeot. Don't be silly. Go to Peugeot. You know, that was it. And he went to Peugeot. And of course, the rest of that was history. That was the smartest move he ever made. But that story gets even better when you move to 2001. And Richard Burns. Have we run out of time? Oh, we've run out of time. I can't tell you the story. No, this is... I know this story is why Luke actually asked for this series. I can't possibly give it away that easily.
I think we should save that one, because that was talking about saving the best to last. That was incredible, yeah. George.
Yeah, but well, anyway, in 2001, Marcus happily ensconced in Peugeot at Subaru. I'd just joined Subaru, and of course, Richard Burns was looking to leave Subaru if he wasn't world champion, but still desperately trying to be world champion, and at the same time had also signed for Peugeot at money. So, but that story really is quite lengthy. That is a proper Shaggy Dog story. So to capture that whole thing, I need 20 minutes, guys. I can't.
Well, I tell you what, that's one that will perhaps get us through the off season. I do want very quickly, before we sign off, to touch on 2024, next year's lineup. David, what can we say? What can't we say? I mean, obviously, dirtfish.com is your go-to. Every day you should be checking just to make sure that you're up to date with all the latest rally news, because the breaking news will be there. David and Luke working very hard.
I think what we can say is that we don't expect too many more surprises. I don't think there are any more surprises for this driver.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
No, quite. Mm. So, no, I think it'll be pretty much as is. You know, the big one that everybody was talking about was potentially, was Ogier going to go jump ship to Hyundai? And clearly, you know, that's not going to happen, I think, now. So
apologies.
Yeah. So I think it's from my side, I think, Luke, there's not going to be any more surprises.
I don't think so. Just to make a bit of a joke here, George, is that your lawyer calling to tell you not to tell any more Marcus Grönholm stories?
it's exactly who it was. Yeah, he said there's a price on that story. He said. There's
listening in on the other line.
As I've discussed many times, I'm very cheap. It's just a dinner. But I'll share that one around Marcus happily with all our avid listeners, because it is a great story. I'll happily do that, but it's a good Shaggy Dog story. It's a bit of intrigue, a bit of mystery, and a vast amount of money. I mean, I'm talking
right. Well, I think that's going to be a paid dinner event. People will buy tickets for that. Sure, we'll get to David on that. I know the time is ticking on, and we're gonna have to move on. And I think the preview that we were going to do for ARA Rally Legend is actually just going to have to be a review. But if you want to stay up to date with everything that is happening in the American Rally Championship, dirtfish.com is your go-to place. Of course, Dirtfish is where you want to go. If you want to have a go as well in a rally car, check out the website for all kinds of driving packages and courses that you can sign up for. And just have some fun at the mothership that is Snoqualmie. Absolutely amazing days out at Dirtfish. Guys, I think we should have put this in three parts because we've kind of had to stop, unfortunately. But it's been brilliant. I've absolutely been hanging on every word you've said there, George. Well done, Luke. Brilliant idea. And David, thanks for coming.
Thank you. I will jump off right now.